radio station. This is KPFT Houston. Calming Beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals it is Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? We are the only program originating in Houston, Texas, devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Greg Audell, and I am privileged to serve on the Board of Writers in the Schools, where we help kids tell their own stories. Along with Dr. Hank Robichek and Dr. Warren Holloman, we are proud to bring Houston's best storytellers to you each and every Thursday at 10 p.m. As always, when you and I get together, I urge you to have a special treat while you listen, because it is story time, my friends. Now, this week, I'm going to hold off just for a couple of minutes telling you what we are devouring in the studio, but you can rest assured it is chocolate, and it goes great with ice-cold milk. Helping me bring the show to you tonight are our newest members, Nicole Grady and Alondra Mejia. Nicole is now tasked with making a sound crystal clear to you. Nicole, when you took Dr. Hank's class, did you ever think that in just a few months you were going to be in charge of a radio station's control board?
Do you mean a few weeks? Absolutely not. I never in my wildest dreams would have thought I would be here. However, I'm very grateful for the opportunity, and it's a great blessing.
We are thrilled to have you here. You're doing a great job, and I have every confidence that our listener audience is going to be well served by you. And we are also thrilled to have two interns this year. Alondra Mejia, did you think a few months ago that you would be working on a radio show?
Of course not. I never imagined this.
What do you think of the experience?
I think it's amazing. I walk in here and my mouth is still in awe.
Well, I got to tell you, I love hearing that, because KPFT is community radio at its finest. You know, we are made up of the community, and the station is run by community members and KPFT members. My guest tonight, Alyssa Ladd, grew up in Sugarland, studied philosophy and Italian at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and briefly lived in Italy twice before settling back in Houston into our coveted inner loop. And she attended my alma mater, the University of Houston Law Center, and she now practices corporate law and lives in the greatest city of Montrose, Texas, with her rescue dog, Murphy. And if you've listened to our show for a while, you know that rescue animals are very close to my heart. She is also on the wine competition committee for the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, and an active member of the Meal Contemporaries. But tonight, it's the spotlight on Alyssa's storytelling ability that will engage you, because though she's only been sharing her stories in public for about 4 months, her signature style has made an indelible impression on the entire storytelling community. It was Boo-town's grown-up story time that inspired her to quit procrastinating and pursue both writing and storytelling, and I'm really glad she did. She is a frequent contributor to grown-up story time. However, she is also a two-time winner of Houston's Story Slam, solidified her as a bona fide teller. A two-time winner of the Story Slam, that is just amazing. This is her first time on the radio, unless you count the time, and tell me if I get this right, that you called into Carpool Karaoke on 100.3 The Bull, and you completely butchered the words to a Kenny Chesney song. Is that true?
That's right. I wanted to win rodeo tickets. I thought I was a big fan, but I've been singing the words wrong for over 10 years.
Oh, no. Well, tonight, Alyssa will be speaking her own words, and you won't want to miss a beat. Alyssa Ladd, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I am thrilled. I was in the audience, I was just blown away by your story, by your poise, and by the audience that erupted in applause at the end of your story. I know you and I share a love for rescue dogs, and that Walking Murphy, your rescue dog, is one of your favorite activities, as is spoiling your goddaughter, Laura?
Laura, yes. She turns one next month.
Oh, wow. So you've got lots of years of spoiling ahead of you. So tonight, friends, we have replaced our usual cookies with birthday cake because it is Alyssa's birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing it with us. Now, as I said, I was lucky to see you at the Moth Story Slam, but I'm just kind of amazed that you just started sharing your stories with audiences because you truly seem like a natural. I mean, you're an inherently gifted storyteller. Can you accept that?
Thank you.
All right. It'll take a while. But I'm hoping you'll tell us what inspired you to say, sure, I'll get up in front of 700 people and give it a go. What was it that pushed you out onto that stage?
Well, at first I had no interest in telling my own story on stage. I really liked the format of grown-up story time where someone else performed the story that I wrote. But really, when I heard that the topic for The Moth in May was escape, there was something inside me nagging me that I had to tell this certain story. So the story that I told that I won with was about the time that I worked and lived in a mental hospital in Italy. And it was about 6 years ago, but something about it still haunted me. So telling that story to a room full of hundreds of strangers was cathartic in a way that time had not yet been. And afterwards, I just felt like I really closed that chapter.
I understand completely. I mean, one thing that I've found interesting is I used to have the worst case of stage fright. I was terrified before I had to perform or give a speech. But when I started using my own words and my own stories, well, then it became just second nature. Do you feel like that?
Yes, there's sort of a letting go process when you let someone else tell your story. So now that I've kind of gotten over a little bit of stage fright, I do like telling my own stories.
Excellent. Yeah, I do too. All right, friends. Well, let's all relax with our snacks as Alyssa shares her first story.
Thanks, Greg. So as you mentioned, it's my birthday, and I am 28, which feels like I'm getting old, but I guess technically I'm a millennial. And as a millennial, after I graduated from college, that means you have to move home with mom and dad, I'm pretty sure.
So is that a rule?
I think that's a rule. So that's what I did. And I'd just been fired from my job as a special ed teacher at the time. So things weren't going so well. But about that time, I applied to Michael's, the craft store, in the town where I grew up, which was Sugar Land, Texas. I only worked there for like 2 months, but it was from before Thanksgiving until after New Year's. So arguably the worst 2 months to work in a craft store where they sell Christmas decorations.
I would imagine.
But so I didn't have to actually sell Christmas decorations because I scored so high on my aptitude test. You may also be surprised to learn that Michael's gives its applicants a math and reading aptitude test.
That does surprise me.
Yeah. And I scored well. I was like, I would hope so. I finished college. So the manager offered me a special position in custom framing. And its primary redeeming quality was that it paid 25 cents more per hour than the rest of the jobs at Michael's.
All right.
I know. But also, I didn't have to restock beads and yarn, which sounded good to me. So the job in and of itself wasn't that bad. I probably would have liked it if it hadn't been in the town where I grew up. I just hated people seeing me constantly in my little white apron or in my white gloves, and I felt very embarrassed. But the job itself was pretty fun. I got to help people pick out their frames and see their art and hear their stories about their art. And I really liked seeing the weird stuff people brought in to have framed. My favorite, though, was this one lady right before Christmas. She called me, and she's all upset because her frames aren't ready yet, and she has a big empty place over her fireplace. And what is she going to tell her Christmas guests? They're coming, and what are they going to think? And I say, fine, I'm going to put them together right now. And I go to the shelf, and I pull out her art, and there are two giant pictures of her naked, covered in rose petals. I mean, Merry Christmas, right? So the job in itself was pretty entertaining, but, you know, I was living at home with my parents. I was working for 25 cents above minimum wage with a college degree. So I just felt like a loser. And that was bad enough. But the fact that everyone I knew came into Michael's and recognized me and had to witness this part of my life was just more embarrassing. And you think, you know, Sugar Land's kind of a big town, but you wouldn't know it based on everyone who came into Michael's. So one day, my former softball coach came into Michael's. He'd coached us when we were 12. His daughter and I were on the same team. And he recognized me. And I thought, well, we're going to reminisce about how fun that team was, or he's going to ask about my parents. But instead, he asks, didn't you go to that fancy, expensive college? Look where that got you.
Wow.
I know. So I'm just completely speechless. I mean, I had wondered if that's what everyone was thinking about me, and he pretty much confirmed that it was. That's what they were thinking. That's kind of the inner monologue I had in my head 10 times a day, but it hurt worse coming from a stranger who I didn't even know this person. But he kept talking, which, as they do. So he told me that his daughter is really making it big as an actress in L.A., and she was just in a Lifetime movie. Maybe I saw it. I mean, I did watch a few Lifetime movies in my day, so I'd seen it. And I didn't tell him this because, you know, I have some tact, but I saw that movie, and she had a supporting role, and she played a kind of promiscuous high school girl who distracts the main character and causes him to lose his college scholarship. So I'm not really sure what he was bragging about.
Oh, my.
But then he left, and he probably never thought about this conversation ever again. But I thought about it a lot because I never want to make someone feel the way that I felt that day. But then, because everyone I know comes into Michael's, later that day, the mom of another girl I played softball with came into Michael's, and her daughter and I had been on the same team for 1 year, and then she transferred to my middle school, and she didn't know anyone but me. And she had been a little overweight and shy and quiet and kind of got made fun of a lot, and I would leave encouraging notes in her locker. I didn't remember any of that when she came into Michael's that day, but moms don't forget. No. So that this mom remembered. So I'm helping her carry something out to her car, and she turns to me and she's all choked up, and she's saying, you'll never know what that meant to me and to my daughter. And she's getting choked up and she's crying, and I've had an emotional day. So then I start crying and I tell her what happened earlier in the day, and pretty soon we're bawling and hugging in the Michael's parking lot. And she's hugging me, and she's just telling me what a good person I am. Not because of what job I did or didn't have, but because I was kind to her daughter when she needed a friend. And that day, I really needed a friend, and it was good to see a familiar face. And for the first time, I was not mad to be working in the town where I grew up.
Wow. I have to tell you, I was so happy that I was in the audience to hear that story Tuesday, and I literally got goosebumps when you told it, and I've listened to it a couple of times, and I just got goosebumps all over right now hearing it.
Thank you.
Because it speaks to not only the power of kindness, but what occurred to me that you must do a lot of nice things if you didn't even remember doing this for a while, and that says a lot about you, and it's nice the way that came full circle. I was really moved by that story. And obviously, the audience was too, because this is what you won the Story Slam with, right?
Yes.
That is wonderful. The power of friendship defies explanation, just as Alyssa's story personified. So don't let those good friendships slip away. They are well worth putting in time and effort. I'm happy that I'll be joining some rowdy buddies from Nederland, Texas, and A&M for a few days of R&R in New Braunfels beginning tomorrow. And guys, try not to lose all your money at the poker table before I get there, because I want to get my share.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. This is Greg Audell with Nicole Grady in our control room, and Alondra Mejia, and Houston's Alyssa Ladd on So What's Your Story on KPFT, 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Nicole, would you tell our listeners about our proud sponsor, the one and the only Houston Storytellers Guild?
Absolutely, Greg. Well, the Guild meets the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Due to the recent fire in the printing museum, the locations of the meetings can be found at www.houstonstorytellers.org. And be sure to follow us on So What's Your Story Facebook page to get the scoop on our thought-provoking guest and events in Houston storytelling. Please remember to like us on the way out. Thanks.
Yes, please like our Facebook page, but also contribute to our Facebook page. We want to hear what stories you want to hear. And if you have a fantastic story, let us hear about it. And you may find yourself sitting right where Alyssa's sitting right now. I bet a few months ago you didn't think you'd be here.
Not at all.
Thank you, Nicole, for talking about our sponsor. Next week, So What's Your Story will be preempted by Pacifica to bring you convention coverage. So please tune in. These conventions are important, people, and whoever you support, you need to be informed, and I hope you get active this election. Besides, these conventions will prove to have some very, very strange stories, I suspect, and you may hear us talk about them in the coming weeks. But on July 28th, we will be right back here with Warren Holloman and his guest, Ernie Turney. Ernie is pastor of Bering United Methodist Church and a member of the fantastic Houston Storytellers Guild. You know, Alyssa, I've discussed with the audience before that I used to have truly, truly paralyzing stage fright. And I went to school for the performing arts, so I was rather notorious for almost passing out before every show. But once I started using my own words and telling my own stories, I just began to feel really comfortable and enjoy it. For me, making that decision to step out on the stage the first time was truly one of the best decisions I have ever made. And so I got to watch you. When you are up there, you seem so calm, cool, and collected. Have you ever had to deal with stage fright? And if you did, how did you ever overcome it?
I'm so glad that I look calm, cool, and collected because I was shaking the entire time and I was pretty sure you could hear it in my voice. Absolutely, I had stage fright. Like I told you this, I didn't do this until about 2 months ago. I always talked too fast when I was a kid, and probably I still do, and no one could ever understand me, which made me very afraid to talk in public. And even in law school, we all had to take this storytelling class, and I was unequivocally terrible at it. And the professors told me, and I think everyone in the class right now would get a good laugh out of the fact that storytelling is now a hobby for me.
I hope your professors are listening.
I hope they are, too. But what ultimately got me out on stage was the need to tell this one story I had. It was like an itch that if I didn't scratch it, it was always going
to
be there.
Absolutely. And I think that's really important. If you decide to participate in a storytelling group, organization, competition, I think your first story needs to be one of those stories that you've been telling long enough that you don't need to write it down. You know, as Dusty Rhodes says at The Moth, you know, you don't pull out a phone or you don't pull out a script when you're at a party to tell a story. You tell your story. And so that's what I would encourage people to do is if you have that itch, that story that needs to be told, that is the story to tell.
I agree.
All right. Well, friends, if like me, you essentially have a frequent visitor card at Houston's Fame Medical Center, then I think you will truly appreciate Alyssa's next story. Alyssa is the kind of person who will quite literally give you blood, sweat, and tears for a great story. And I think that is the mark of a great storyteller. Would you tell us your second story?
Sure, and I'm excited that you haven't heard this one.
I have not. I'm excited too.
So about this time last year, I'm at work and I see a sign in the break room for a blood drive. And I've given blood before, you know, and it's been fine. And I've got time that day, so I go down there to the blood drive. And the blood drive lady, she tells me, well, you know, you're heavier now than you've ever been, and you can now give a double red blood cell donation. And first of all, I'm like, that's rude. But I was like, you know, she said, it's actually a little extra time. And I was like, well, that's fine. I've got time. So I decided, okay, whatever, I'll do it. Not really knowing what I was getting myself into. So what I would come to learn is that a double red blood cell donation is when they take 4 pints of blood out of your body.
Whoa.
You have 10 or 11, in case you were wondering. That's 40% for you math people at home. And they spin out the red blood cells, and they take those for themselves, and then they put the wastewater and some saline solution back into you. So that's all things that I learned later because it didn't go well for me. So I'm in the chair, and I finish giving blood. And usually you kind of sit there for a while, right?
Yes.
No, they wanted the chair. They needed people to sit in the chair. So they're like, you're good. You just go back to your office. So I took my cookies. I didn't even eat my cookies. I took my cookies up to my office. I walked up a flight of stairs. And by the time I do this, I am just completely exhausted. I'm out of breath. I'm blacking out. I get to my desk chair. I sit down and I'm thinking, I am not okay. So I go to my phone and I try to dial my secretary and it's only four digit extension. I can't remember it for the life of me. My brain isn't functioning so well. So I'm like, I need help. I'm in a corner office. And if I pass out in here, no one's going to find me. So I better stand up and go to the office next door and tell them what happened. Well, I don't make it there. I'm in the middle of the hallway and I'm staggering back and forth like I'm had a few adult beverages. And all of a sudden, my body goes stiff and I fall straight backwards like a tree in the forest. Oh. And I crack my head open on the floor. I'm at work, by the way. So a work office, it's like cement with like a very thin carpeting on it. So I hit my head on the floor and I'm completely concussed for about a minute, 60 seconds. And I come to and there's 8 or 9 people standing around me, including like the head partner of the firm, which is not when your main head boss is over you. That's not what you want to find.
No.
But the funniest part about all of this was how I fell. So I fell straight backwards like a tree in the forest, but I fell out of my shoes like I was a cartoon character.
Really?
So they were side by side, like as if I'd left them neatly there. And, you know, I was wearing a knee length kind of flowy skirt that was no longer knee length and not how I want to be found by my coworkers. My glasses had flown off 10 feet behind me. And of course, I have a long sleeve dress on, so no one can see that I just gave blood. And so they all believe I'm having a seizure.
No.
So I come to everyone standing over me yelling, and paramedics are already on their way. 911's already been called. And so they, you know, it's a head injury. So they say, don't move, lay there. And I'm trying to make a joke of it because I've been at this job less than a year and I don't want to be noticed at all, let alone for being sprawled on the floor in the middle of the hallway.
Sure.
And so when the head boss of all bosses is like, Alyssa, what happened? I just tell him, oh my God, I gave too much blood. I should have kept more for myself. And no one thought it was very funny, but I was trying to make a joke of it because I was so uncomfortable.
Poor thing.
So the paramedics come. And my blood sugar is very low, they tell me, so I have to eat a tube of lemon-flavored glucose paste, which is the consistency of toothpaste and tastes like frosting. And they kept pricking my finger to make sure my blood sugar is going up, and they check out my head and my brain, and my neck is not broken, and my brain is not bleeding, which is great news. All around great news. And so that's the first fire station. And the second fire station comes, and I'm pretty sure that's a 2-alarm fire in fire terms. And I just want to shout out Houston Fire Department 7 and 8 for saving my life that day. So the second fire station comes, and there's a very cute firefighter in this group. And he's holding an EKG machine, and he says, well, you know, we have to check your heart because it was a head injury. We need you to sit up. And so they sit me up, and I mean, the room is spinning. I think I'm going to throw up. I'm just nauseous. And but the weirdest thing, Greg, and I know you've never experienced this, but the weirdest thing was the feeling that my bra was not on anymore.
I have never experienced that.
See, it's a concerning sensation. And since I'd been unconscious for a while, I was even more concerned. So I kind of motioned for my secretary to come over, and I whispered to her, did someone remove my bra when I was unconscious? And she just looks horrified. And she's like, okay, everyone needs to go back to their offices right now. And she clears the hallway. And she's like, no one touched your breast while you were passed out. That's also great news. I'm really glad to hear that. So what happened was the sheer force of my fall had just like split my bra down the middle. It wasn't unhooked. Like it was fabric ripped, like wires ripped. It was like a catastrophe. So I'm sitting up and this firefighter is like, okay, we have to do this EKG machine. And I'm like, he's like, you just need to remove your shirt. You can keep your bra on. And I was like, well. And so someone's like, hey, you're in the middle of a hallway still at work. Maybe you should not do that. And so they, but I'm like so nauseous still that I can't stand up and walk into my office. So this firefighter puts his arms underneath my armpits, and he drags me backwards into my office across the carpet, which is like the least dignified way to travel, I'm pretty sure. So he says, you know, you can keep your bra on. And I was like, well, and I make some futile attempts to repair it with like binder clips and hair clips, and like, it's not working. So I hope this is okay to say on the radio. I just sit there barefoot and bare-breasted on my office floor, holding my chest in my hands. Can I say that? I don't know.
You can say that. You're fine. You're fine.
Well, this firefighter put stickers on my chest, and he's like smirking, and I'm like, you. So it turns out I'm okay and everything, but I don't have to go to the I don't have to go in the ambulance. So I gotta go home, and I'm kind of confused still, and I've got a lot of pain because, you know, cracked my head open. So I call my other friend from like childhood, who's a firefighter, and I tell him what happened, and I'm like, hey, maybe should I go get like some CAT scans or something? And he's like, oh my God, I've heard about this story. Like, I'm friends with that guy. We went to paramedic school together. I heard about this already.
No.
And by the way, he would like your number. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And I was like, well, he was pretty cute. So I gave it to him. He never called. So if you're out there, if you're still listening. So needless to say, I don't participate in work blood drives anymore. But I get a lot of phone calls from my coworkers mocking me every time there's a blood drive at work.
I bet no one will ever forget that blood drive at your office. I'm surprised they had blood drives.
But still give blood. It's a great cause.
It is a great cause. And we must say, I think this is a rare exception to giving blood.
Absolutely.
And you
don't
give
too much blood. Just give like one pint.
I think one pint's probably enough. Hey, Nicole, you have done a fabulous job as your first day on the control panel and helping us bring Alyssa's story to the airwaves of Houston and all across the world via www.kpft.org. And while I'm talking about the site, I want our audience to know that the 28th will be a fund drive show, but you do not need to wait to donate to KPFT. Just go to www.kpft.org to donate. And please scroll down and then select So What's Your Story as the program that you would like to support. Nicole.
Yes, Greg. Thank you very much. And to all of our listeners, if you have any program ideas, you want to be a guest, or just have comments, drop us a line at drhank@kpft.org or leave us a comment on our So What's Your Story Facebook page, and Dr. Hank, Warren, or Greg will get back to you.
Thank you. And you know, folks, we really do want y'all to get more involved because we are your show, and we want to bring you the stories you want to hear. And I think this has just been a delightful story and a delightful 30 minutes. And I have a feeling that we are going to see you back in this chair again. And our audience is going to enjoy hearing your stories.
It went by so fast. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I look forward to having you again. Scooter is next, with the inner side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day while you're driving home, relaxing before turning in for the night, or just chilling out. Join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and we will keep bringing them to you. And remember, as Alyssa's story, her first story reminded us, everyone has a story, and everyone has struggles. So whenever the opportunity to do so presents itself, be kind and help each other. I'm Greg Audell, reminding you of our show's motto, it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace, my friends.
You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. If you got troubles, I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, we can see it through, 'cause you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. Thank you.
Some other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am.
Bigger, strong, too,
baby.
But none of them will ever love you the way I do. It's me and you, boy.
And it's the year.
Electro Love Fest 2016, a KPFT fundraising event, is seeking sponsors to empower KPFT's fundraising efforts and events on September 23rd through 25th. We have generous packages for those who sponsor Electro Love Fest 2016, including